Recordings have started.
Thank you very much, Carol. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the first meeting of the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information PDP Charter Drafting Team meeting on Thursday, 8th of August, 2013. On the call today, we have Chris Dillon, Rudy Vansnick. We have had Vinny Kumar Singh on the Adobe Connect. He will join us shortly again, I'm sure. We have received no apology for today's call. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Lars Hoffman, Mary Wong, Julia Charvolin, and myself, Natalie Perubin. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Julie.
Thank you very much, Natalie, and welcome to everyone. So in absence of a chair, and that will be one of our first items of business, is to select a chair, I will initiate the call. And so thank you again for everyone joining. We've had the roll call. The statements of interest, I believe, have been submitted and are linked, but we generally ask at this time whether or not anyone has any changes to their statement of interest. Does anyone have any changes they'd like to note?
Yes, this is Chris Dillon speaking. Actually, I edited my statement of interest today online, but just in case it hasn't gone live or something like that, I'll just explain why I did that. And the reason is that originally I put in my statement of interest that I was involved with evaluation panels. And I then thought, actually the fact that I was involved specifically with the geographic names evaluation panel and the string similarity evaluation panel, that could actually be relevant. So I then added that earlier today, and it's just in case anybody hasn't seen it.
Thank you very much, Chris. That's extremely helpful. Does anyone else have anything they wish to add?
Rudy Vansnick speaking.
Please, go ahead, Rudy.
Well, as a European, we are used to have more than one language in a daily business conversation. So translating in different languages is an aspect that is part of our duty, our daily duty. And I think that based on that, I can bring some added value to this working group.
Thank you very much, Rudy. That's extremely helpful. And I think, actually, Rudy, you've moved into our item number two on the agenda voluntarily, and that is where we're asking people to make introductions and to for the drafting team members to share information regarding their interests, background, skills, et cetera, which you have done with your comment just now, which is extremely helpful. Do you or Chris, do you have anything that you wish to say about your background that could be helpful to the other members of the drafting team?
Again, this is Chris Dillon. Yes, I would like to just mention, you know, what my background is and why I was interested in getting involved with this. It's quite simple to explain, really. I've from a very young age, I've been very interested in foreign languages and scripts. At university, I did Japanese and Korean and various other languages to a lesser extent. Over the years, I've just picked up quite a lot of languages and scripts. And so with ICANN, as I said earlier, I was involved with two evaluation panels during the first round of the new GTLDs. I then got involved with the Chinese case study part of the variant issues project, and then later on with the project 2.1, which is the procedure to develop and maintain the label generation rules for the root zone in respect of IDNA labels. I think the reason I was interested when I saw translation and transliteration is that, as I've been learning my languages, those have both been extremely important parts. So, you know, certainly during my degree, I did a huge amount of translation of all sorts of Japanese and Korean and classical Chinese as well. And then doing various jobs over the years, I've done a lot of transliteration as well. I was involved with a business information center, and so I had to transliterate a lot of addresses, usually Japanese addresses. So I know a lot about that. I think that's probably. The other thing is, I should mention, in a former job, I was involved with librarianship, and I think there are some parts of librarianship that are really relevant to this, because in libraries there are concepts of things like name authority files. So, you know, it's basically, what is a name? So, you know, are we talking about Chris Dillon, or is he Christopher Dillon, or is he Christopher J. Dillon, or is he Christopher James Dillon? You know, how do we decide what a name is? So that's name authority, and that's something that libraries are very strong on. And also, if we're talking about a project where there's a lot of existing data which is not in the form that we would really like to have it in, so it does not have non-Roman script data in there, then you're talking about perhaps deciding that from a certain point you will add that data, but then at a later point you may want to do what librarians call retrospective conversion, and that actually means going through old data and making sure that it looks like the new data. So I just thought that library experience I had, it's a long time ago now, is actually quite relevant to this. That's me done anyway. I'm sorry it was rather long.
This is Julie Hedlund. Thank you, Chris. That was extremely helpful. And Rudy, did you have anything else you'd like to add to what you've already said?
Yes, Rudy Vansink speaking. Well, based on the fact that we are looking for translation of contact details, in Belgium we have this particularity that an address can be in two languages, which can make things very difficult. You can have your address, especially in Brussels, you can have the street and the village name in Dutch or French. So whatever language is used, it can mix up a lot when we consider contact details of, for instance, the registrant. So that experience can, I think, help in the work we have to go through. On the other side, being close to the EU and have been working with and for EU as a evaluator rapporteur, the use of different languages in contact details is very often also an issue where people don't really understand the reasoning why you have to stick to the original language or when you're allowed to use a translation. So I think that experience can probably help in this working group.
This is Julie Hedlund speaking. Thank you, Rudy. That's also extremely helpful. And I think at this point we still just have... I do see that Vinay Kumar Singh has joined us. Vinay, are you on the line as well? I don't hear you, but I see that Natalie is typing. Perhaps we're still trying to engage you on the phone. It would be good if we had a few more drafting team members to join us. So maybe let's take a moment. I see that... Yes, and thank you, Rudy, for your question in the chat room. We do have seven members on the drafting team, so right now we are missing four members. So I'm not sure exactly how much we'll be able to accomplish today, but of course the meeting is transcribed, and perhaps others may be able to join. We have found that in the last couple of weeks, several community members have been on vacation, as we call it, vacation fatigue. I'm not sure how it's fatiguing, but at any rate, we are missing some people, I think, because people may be out. I see that Vinay was typing, so perhaps we'll give a moment and see if he can join us. While we're waiting for that, perhaps I could move on to the next item, which is the principles of transparency and openness. And this relates to the core values for ICANN in its bylaws. And these do specifically talk about the principle of employing open and transparency policy development mechanisms, promoting well-informed decisions based on expert advice, and ensuring entities most affected can assist in the policy development process. And this does also relate to the fact that, as you all may know, this is an open list. The drafting team list is open and is publicly archived. And also, the wikis are available to anyone who has a Confluence Wiki account, not just to the members of the drafting team. So at any rate, we do expect to follow these principles of transparency and openness. We do transcribe and record these meetings. We'll make those the recordings and transcriptions available, and they also are accessible to the public as well. And so I would just ask if anybody has any questions with this item on the agenda, or if staff have anything they wish to add. Thank you. And I see that Vinay has some issues on his end, hoping to resolve them shortly. The next item on the agenda is that we will need to select a chair or co-chairs for the drafting team. And now I note that we do not have all drafting team members on this call, so there may be others who may wish to volunteer, but I will ask for those who are on the call, and I'll ask Vinay as well as soon as he's joined. But for those on the call, Chris and Rudy, consider whether or not this is something that you'd like to do. And, of course, we can, following this call, make a request to the list also, asking if anybody would like to volunteer. And I see in the chat room that Rudy is proposing Chris.
Well,
this is what you get for showing up for the meeting, Chris.
That's very interesting. I mean, I'm really very interested in this, but it's the first PDP I've ever had a heavy involvement in, so I'm not sure I'm ready to be chair. I think I could be a co-chair, but possibly not chair.
Well, I see that Rudy is willing to co-chair.
Yes. Well, maybe, you know, maybe that could run. Yes. Maybe that could work.
Well, two heads normally know more than one head. and for me too, it's the first task in the PDP, as I'm coming from the at-large advisory committee, where I spent 8 years. And found it was time to move to policy, as I know how advice works now, or doesn't work, and how I can help in policy, making policy more active. So I'm willing to co-chair if such is needed. But maybe we can look for some other people.
Well, what we could do is... Go ahead, sorry.
Are you sure, Julie?
I was just going to suggest, this is Julie Hedlund speaking, that what we could do is is say to the list that Chris and Rudy are willing to co-chair, but to open this up to the list and see if there are other volunteers. Would that be an approach?
This is Chris speaking. I'm really happy with that.
And
if I might just briefly, one quick note. I completely agree with what Julie said, and I think it worked just fine. Technically, though, this is still the drafting team, I believe, so there will probably even be another call formally for a chair once the charter is adopted and the working group proper will start, although often it's, I believe, the same person or the same combination of person who carries on, but there's no obligation, so you could even take this as a test run, you two, as your first chairing, and if it scares you off, you can step aside, and if you like, you can continue.
This is Julie Hedlund-Lars. Thank you for that very helpful explanation. Yes, this is indeed the drafting team. So Chris and Rudy could be co-chairs of the drafting team and then decide differently after they've had that experience or not.
Rudy, once again speaking here. I think that in the future, when the draft is done and the work group really starts, that probably we'll have more people popping up as they will more sympathize with the working group and will be back from vacation. I have no vacation on my list for the next 3 months, so I can be steady.
This is Julie Hedlund speaking. Thank you very much, Rudy, for that. That's very helpful. Then I would propose that after this call, I can send a message. When I send out the actions from this call to the list, I can indicate that we do have interest from Chris and Rudy to co-chair, but we certainly do encourage other members of the drafting team to indicate whether or not they wish to chair or co-chair the drafting team. And indicate that this is indeed the chair or co-chair of the drafting team, and we can, of course, select other leaders for the PDP team, the PDP working group, once the charter is approved.
This is Chris speaking. Thank you very much. That's clear, and I'm really happy with that.
Thank you, Chris. Then our next order of business is to look at items for review, and we have in particular the task of the drafting team. And this is the document that you see in front of you in the Adobe Connect room. The drafting team is developing the charter for the PDP working group on the translation and transliteration of contact information, and I won't read through all this stuff. I think you can see the document if you're in the room, but essentially there are two key issues, whether to translate into a common script or transliterate into a common language, pardon me, or transliterate into a common script, and who should decide, who should bear the burden for translating or transliterating this information. And if you have reviewed the documents that we sent out for review, these issues arise from the recommendations in the final report of the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group. As a bit of background, the IRDWG was a joint community working group with participation from the GNSO and the ESSAC. And that group met and worked for more than a year on a report, and they were not able to solve the two issues that we have stated here. That is that they presented several models on whether and how to translate or transliterate contact information. They discussed issues concerning the burden for translating and transliterating, but they did not come to a consensus on a model and who should take the burden of translating and transliterating contact information. So that is why these issues are now put out in this PDP. And in fact, a recommendation from the final report was that these issues should be addressed in a PDP. So where we are now is that, as you know, the GNSO Council has agreed to go ahead with the PDP, and we're drafting the charter. And the charter should include the elements in the working group guidelines. And there is actually a template that I'm just going to put up on the screen now that aids in the drafting of a charter. So essentially it has all the elements that you would need to have in a charter. And then, of course, it has to be made specific to this work of this particular working group. So I've put the template out on the screen, but I'm going to stop talking now and allow time for some questions. And I think we'll probably have to cover some of the same ground, perhaps, when we meet again. But at any rate, let me stop now and ask if there are questions.
This is Chris Dillon, and it's just a very simple question. I tried to go through all the documentation before this call, but the one thing I couldn't track down was this template. It's actually the first time I've seen it.
Ah, okay. This is Julie Hedlund speaking. Thanks for that, Chris. I thought we had attached it to the message that we sent out.
Yes, again, this is Chris speaking. There was a message that went out that said it had an attachment, but if there was an attachment, the UCL email system got rid of it, so I didn't receive it.
It also is posted to the wiki.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
but still, it is... It also exists, and we should have made this more clear. I'm sorry for that. It also exists as part of the working group guidelines, and the working group guidelines are both part of incorporated as part of the GNSO operating procedures, and they are also called out separately on the site that where the operating procedures are listed. We could have sent you a list to that link to that document. So there are a number of places that exist. We just didn't tell you what those were.
No problem.
But thank you for that. So any other questions, please?
Rudy Van Fink speaking. It is clear that when I look into the details of the report that the struggle is probably based on the fact that data can be stored at two different locations, especially the registrant data. The WHOIS data is in principle in a general database, but is also stored at the registrar's location. And when I look into Europe, it depends on which registrar you're using to register your domain name, and that registrar can decide on a language profile for registration of the registrant data that is not familiar with the all-over English language, I would say. And I just was a bit surprised that there was no consensus from the group to have a proposed solution for this. So it's probably going to be a quite difficult task to get a final conclusion on this. I don't know if there is a date for this working group to have the work finished.
So this is Julie Hedlund speaking. There are dates, and I should probably pull out those. There's essentially a set of guidelines that talks about how much time should be spent in each part of the PDP. While they don't say how long it takes to develop the charter. They do say, well, you know, this is roughly how long it might take to produce an initial report, and you know, and that could be, you know, several months, depending on how much information needs to be gathered and so on. And then that report out of the working group has to go out for public comment. There's a set time for that, as well as time for reply comments if there are initial comments. Then there's another, you know, there's another time frame for producing a final report, and then there are certain constraints, and this is in the PDP manual, actually. So what I'll do is I'll send you all a link to that so you can see where that is stated. But there's a certain amount of time that the GNSO Council has to take to deal with a final report and voting on it and so on. And if they don't vote on it, then there are various parameters to that as well. So I don't have a quick answer for you on exactly when this work needs to be done. Suffice to say, we are expecting it to take some time. We do expect that there'll be a certain amount of engagement in the community, because there are a number of parties that could be affected by any decision, policy decision in this matter. So, and I agree. I was actually one of the staff members supporting the IRDWG from its initiation. So it certainly did weigh a number of issues, you know, and tried, you know, it did actually come up with four different models for how to address this issue. But the difficulty is that ultimately it is a policy decision, and the IRD working group was not a policy process. It was not a PDP. So once they, you know, determined that really this would be a policy issue, then it's more properly dealt with in a PDP. And I agree that it certainly is an issue that will take some time and some consideration, and has its challenges. But so, the first order of business then for this drafting team is to develop the charter. And if you like, I can just walk you through briefly the various pieces of this, of the charter in the template. And I've unsynced the document, so you can feel free in Adobe Connect to move through the sections yourself. Right now I'm on page 1 of the document in section 1, working group identification. And then this is just, you know, the name of the group, and referencing the version of the working group guidelines, the chartering organization, which is the GNSO, the date the charter is approved, which we won't have right now, but as you may note in today's program agenda, number 6, the deadline is for a motion to be submitted at the next GNSO Council meeting to approve the charter, and that's September 2013. So that's our initial deadline that we're working towards for approval of the charter. Once the charter is approved, then another call for volunteers for the working group will go out, and the working group will be formed, and we'll start the work of the PDP. So charter would contain the name of the working group chair. Again, we don't know who that will be. Some of these will be blanks as we develop. Appointed liaisons, that is, liaisons to the GNSO Council. Again, we don't know who those are. So some of these will be blanks until the working group is established. Although if there is someone who has said that they want to lead the working group, they know they want to be part of the working group or co-chair of the working group, we can put that in the charter, and that can be approved with the charter. And the same thing for the liaison. If we have if we know of a particular GNSO council member who would be an appropriate liaison, we can include that in the charter. If there are any advisors, the URLs for the workspaces and so on. So that's all sort of administrative matters in that first section. Any questions about Section 1? And please tell me if this is more information, less information than you need. So the next item is Section 2, Mission, Purpose, and Deliverables. These are sort of key elements of the charter, and these are tied to a certain extent to the issues in the PDP, and that the working group is chartered to look at the specific issues identified in the final issue report, and the goals. And deliverables and so on are tied to that. The deliverables and timeframes, that gets back to what I referenced as far as the PDP manual has some specific timeframes for how long things might take, and staff have guidelines there as well. So the charter drafting team would look ahead and try to make a guess as far as when, how much time might be needed, recognizing the fact that that more time might be needed, but at least to get something in the charter as a parameter. And as you see, the objective and goals talks about the issues. The issues are the ones identified in the final issue report, and perhaps other issues that might be sub-issues that might be identified there as well. And as you'll note, in certain working groups, and this one in particular, if it's a PDP working group, then milestones and timelines are prescribed either in the ICANN bylaws or in the PDP manual. And so that can be pulled in here as well. Any questions about Section 2? Section 3 is formation, staffing, and organization. And a lot of this has a lot of this is very specific to the issues involved here. So, for instance, these are fairly technical issues. I think Chris and Rudy, you both have highlighted certain areas of expertise that are very important for a group such as this. Those are the types of areas that we want to highlight under membership criteria, that it would be helpful, to have people who have, say, expertise with non-ASCII scripts, for instance, non-English scripts, with translation, with transliteration, and so on. Those are all items that can be placed here. And group formation, dependencies, and dissolution, relationships with other groups. For instance, it might be that this working group could be interested in having specific input from the ESSEC, perhaps, on technical issues. The ESSEC was very much involved in the development of the IRD working group report, so we may state that here. But perhaps also ensuring that the working group has representation from registrars and registries and CCNSO and so on, or CCTLDs. Because all these groups could potentially be affected in some way or another. And I think I note here in the chat room, Rudy, that is a good point. Links to IDN will be interesting too, and I think that is absolutely correct, and we can also indicate that perhaps we would like someone in the working group who has experience in IDNs or that the working group could consult with staff in ICANN who are working on the IDN issues. There are also ESSAC members who have specific expertise in that area. With respect to working group roles, functions, and duties, there actually are there's quite a bit of information in the working group guidelines on the various roles, and then for instance, roles are in fact 2.2 of the working group guidelines states that that there is a chair and the roles of the chair. Co-chairs and vice chairs, secretary, liaison, roles, the roles of the members and staff, and so actually we can reference a section in the working group guidelines, and it says here that that section could just simply be referenced in the charter rather than duplicated in the charter, and then. Statements of interest that would provide the guidelines for working group members to provide their statements of interest and what those would contain, and those could link to the GNSO Operating Procedures Chapter 5, which is the statement of interest procedure. Any questions about Section 3? Rules of Engagement, Section 4. This has to do with decision-making methodologies, how the working group reports and how often it reports its work. Generally, reports are provided to the GNSO Council. It may specifically say that the working group, for instance, could provide a report at every GNSO Council meeting. The decision-making methodologies is also described in some detail in the working group guidelines, and I will indeed send the document around, the guidelines document around to you. But there is a very specific standard methodology for making decisions. Section 3.6 of the working group guidelines describes what is full consensus, for instance, or otherwise known as unanimous consensus. What is consensus? Strong support but significant opposition, and how that's addressed, divergence or no consensus, and how minority views are addressed. And so what one could do in this charter is simply incorporate by reference Section 3.6 of the Working Group Guidelines, or the working group can decide to deviate from the standard methodology, but it should then state why it's doing so. And then what to do if there are problems or issues with respect to decision-making. And again, these reference sections 3.4, 3.5, and 3.7 of the working group guidelines, how to close the group, and how to assess the work of the group. So a certain amount of this information here is referencing already existing information in the working group guidelines and may not need to be duplicated other than by reference, and the drafting team may decide that it simply wants to have the references in and not do anything different. And then document history, how you track the changes to the charter. I'm actually now, if you wanted to move ahead, and thank you, Rudy, I see, and just to note this for the transcript, Rudy has noted that there's he thinks there's no need to use other rules than those of Section 3.6 of the Working Group Guidelines. Are there any questions before I move forward? I was going to go ahead and move to the actual template. Just shows the layout of the charter. And I've just emphasized that much of the filling in of the charter is linking to existing information. Really, the heart of the charter and where it differs is the mission, purpose, and deliverables. So the objectives and goals, mission, scope, deliverables, and time frame, all of which would link to the actual issues being studied in the PDP. And then the membership criteria would vary, again, based on the issues being addressed and, to a certain extent, the dependencies and dissolution. But the roles and statements of interest are essentially pulled from the working group guidelines. And actually, if you scan through the template, you'll notice Section 4, Rules of Engagement, simply is pulled directly from 3.6 of the working group guidelines, as is the issue escalation and resolution process. So I think I have gone through all of the pieces of the document, and I guess I would stop here and ask if there are any questions from anyone concerning the charter and how and the information it contains. Unless I have put you all to sleep. I hope not. Then, next order of business is to develop a work plan to develop the charter. Given that the deadline is 30 September 2013, to have a motion and a charter ready, and actually it's really then 10 days before that, the motions are due, so 20 September 2013. And so we have a little bit over a month to develop the charter. And I have a suggestion, and I'm certainly happy to be overridden, but one suggestion would be that I could take a first cut at getting all of the boilerplate information in here, putting in information that I know relates to the issues at hand, the issues in the PDP. Because I worked to support the IRD working group, and I also helped write the preliminary issue report and the final issue report. I'm fairly familiar with the issues. So I'd be more than happy as staff to produce a draft for the drafting team to consider and discuss on its next call.
This is Chris Dillon. I would just like to say that I really welcome that. That would seem to be a way of getting the maximum time for people to look at what you do and improve it. So I really welcome that. Thank you.
This is Julie Hedden. Thank you, Chris. Rudy, does that sound like an acceptable approach to you?
Rudy Benjamin speaking. Yes, thank you, Julie. Much appreciated that you would guide us and help us through the first phase of producing this charter, as we both are quite new in doing this work. It would help us. And when I look into the report, which is about 24 pages, if I'm not wrong, it's a quite long report, where there is a lot of information that probably is needed as some background information to the charter. I'm just wondering if that's usually done, that you use from the initial document, from the initial report, some data that is dropped into the chart itself.
Yes, this is Julie Headland. I would definitely draw from information in the issue report, the final issue report, and also note that the final issue report drew heavily on the IRD working group's report as well. So I think that in the heart of the charter, where we're looking at the issues, the goals, and so on, I would, as a first cut, take a look at making sure that these goals and issues are consistent with what has been identified in the final issue report. And the same for the scope as well. And one of the things that that we need to be careful with in drafting the charter is that a PDP does have a very generally prescribed scope. In fact, if you look at the issue report, the scope itself has been reviewed by ICANN legal staff to ensure that that the issues do indeed relate to policy development and fall within appropriately within a PDP. So I'd take these things in mind, but what I would do also when I send around an initial charter is ask people to, you know, to take the time ahead of time to look through the final issue report, to look through the IRD working group report, and just make sure that what I've put into the charter is consistent there. But that would certainly be my goal. Then I will take as an action item to do this, my next question then would be concerning our frequency of meetings. We can decide to hold them weekly, biweekly. I think given our deadline, we probably should at the least hold a meeting every other week. And or weekly, and I'd ask Chris and Rudy if you have a preference there.
This is Lars. If I can just add very quickly, if we were to have it weekly, we would only have three more meetings before the council, I believe.
Weekly. So I see, just looking now, 15th, 20, 29. No, we'd have more than that if it was weekly.
Oh, no, sorry. This is August. Absolutely. I do apologize.
Oh, no. Please tell me that I'm wrong. Good. Weekly would give us...
I thought we have 5 weeks.
Pardon me?
Sorry, Rudy here. I think we have approximately 5 weeks. If we look to the date of 20th of September, we have approximately 5 weeks for calls. So I think weekly is probably the most convenient as we will need to go through a lot of data, and perhaps in the meantime we will have a few other members in drafting team that would join us so that we will have more input also.
And Chris?
Yeah, this is Chris. I was just going to say I completely agree. I think it should be weekly.
Very good. Thank you to both of you. And I see also that Vinay has said weekly would be good. So thank you all. And then what I will do is take as an action to have a draft of the charter out prior to next week's meeting. I don't know that I'll be able to have it probably as soon as Monday, but I would try to have it by Tuesday, a couple of days in advance of the meeting, at least to give people a chance to read it prior to Thursday's meeting, recognizing, of course, that it is a draft and we'll expect that it will go through some iterations, meaning I'm saying that it won't be perfect.
This is Lars. Natalie just pinged me on the jab. Just to confirm that we're going to hold the weekly meeting same time, I presume, and obviously on Thursdays too. Yes.
Thank you, Lars. This is Julie Headland. I would assume the same time, unless others disagree. But I think that was the exercise in doing the doodle, is to hopefully settle on a recurring time.
Rudy speaking here. Yeah, I booked already in my calendar every Thursday at 17 Central European time.
This is Chris speaking. I've done the same thing.
Julie Headland speaking. Thank you very much. Then we'll settle with the same time and meet next week then on Thursday, and I will have a draft in advance of that meeting for everyone to look at. I'm going to set myself a goal by COB next Tuesday. I guess that only really gives people a day or so to look at it, but I will take a little bit of time to do so. At least we'll have a chance to give it a quick read-through. It's not going to be a voluminous document, and a lot of it will be boilerplate. So hopefully what we can ask people to do is really focus on Section 2 in particular, mission, purpose, and deliverables, and also Section 3, the formation, staffing, and organization. Any other thoughts or questions or comments?
Rudy speaking. I'm just wondering, a few times the mic of Vinay popping up, giving some sound, so I would like to know if Vinay has a possibility to speak on this call now, or that he just has no audio connect.
Hi, Rudy. Hi. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello, Vinay. We can hear you.
Hello. Hello, Rudy.
Yes, Vinay, we hear you.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we hear you, Vinay.
I thought that I was delayed due to some net connection, but it was good meeting.
Thank you very much, Vinay. We do appreciate it. Hopefully we'll have your issues solved for the next meeting. Thank you very much, everyone. And as it's 2 minutes before the hour, I do want to make sure that we end on time. And so unless anyone has any other comments, I would suggest we close the call and stop the recording, and we will look forward to seeing you all next week.